Hey, I'm Brian Teller. I work in DevOps and SRE, and I run Teller's Tech. Ship It Weekly is where I filter the noise and focus on what actually matters when you're the one running infrastructure and owning reliability. Most weeks, it's a quick news recap. In between those, I drop interview episodes with folks who are actually building in the space. Today is one of those interviews. I'm joined by Austin Reed from Horizon.dev. He helps small and mid-sized businesses save serious time with AI and automation. And this isn't theoretical. We talk about what actually works when you're automating real workflows with real revenue behind them, not just demos. We get into the biggest misconceptions, why projects fail more from communication than code, where human in the loop makes sense, and what tools his team is using behind the scenes, from GPT and Claude to Cursor, CI/CD, and code review bots. Today, I'm joined by Austin Reed. Austin Reed, your automation expert with Horizon.dev. He helps SMBs save serious time with AI and automation. And we're going to talk about what actually works in the real world, not just demos. Austin, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
So I'm curious, what do you do day-to-day in your job?
Man, a little bit of everything. I do a lot less programming nowadays than I did when we started. When I started, it was just me and my ex-business partner, Mateos. We were just keyboard warriors, always programming, me and him, and I would do sales and accounting, whatever. But nowadays, I mostly manage the team, lead the team. I hire people. I help the team with project structure and architecture. I help debug more advanced problems. Sometimes I jump into code, but it's not that often. But I'd say the majority of my time is with client relations and on sales calls. 100%.
What is the real unlock or benefit for AI and automation for small to medium businesses right now, in your opinion?
Well, I guess it would depend on what area of the business you're talking about unlocking, right? Every business is unique with its own problems. Some businesses, you know, they would really benefit by having some sort of sales automation, sales AI enablement, right? Helping them generate more leads or helping them to where they don't drop leads or helping them with statistics on that side of things. Other businesses, they have that unlock and they would benefit more from fulfillment side of things, making sure everything is tight, everything's efficient, working properly. There's not any errors going on. AI can be used across, I'd say, big portions of a lot of businesses. Most businesses, I mean, they essentially function the same. They take in some sort of customer, they service the customer in some way, or they give them some sort of product, right? And then there's the, after you turn in the project, like transition period, right? Where you get like referrals on the back end and stuff. And so adding AI in any of those core areas, I think really, really helps. 100%.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what would you say is like the biggest misconception that companies have when they say, we want automation, but they don't necessarily know what that means, right? They want automation, they want to move quicker maybe, but they don't necessarily know what automation is or what that actually entails.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two. One, on one side of things, you have people who think that AI is going to cause more problems than it's going to solve, or they don't trust the quality of AI. They don't have a firm belief in the powers of what it can do. And on the other side of things, they're definitely too gung-ho to get things done. I find the biggest issue is usually around some sort of content generation. So they want to automate their Instagram, they want to automate their video creation, things like that. And so they think that AI can just do everything. And another thing is they also think that because there's AI and everything's easy and we have things like Cursor and stuff now, that it's really easy to build these things. And so like they think it's going to cost like a couple $100 or $1,000 to get a system that's robust enough to like manage the business. It's like, hey, you know, your business is working like $100, $200,000 worth of sales a month. And you honestly think that like a $300 product is going to be able to sustain that. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
So you have a lot of these problems. It's just underestimating and overestimating their capabilities, depending on what side you're on. And then definitely overestimating how cheap it is.
Right? Yeah. No, that's fair. Okay. So I know, like we talked about this a little bit, depending on the company, there's a lot of different automation wins, but what based on your experience, for companies, what is the most popular or common win for automation?
Okay. Yeah. So it's going to be one of two things. Usually it's either on the customer service side of things or it's going to be on the sales side of things. So specifically for B2B businesses, it'd probably be more on the sales side of things. Like I said, automating lead flow, increasing the amount of leads you're reaching out to, enabling your BDRs, SDRs, AEs to be able to do their jobs even better. That drives a massive amount of impact in sales organizations. Whereas just 2 years ago, like SDRs, BDRs, they were sending 50, 100 emails a day. They were handwriting the emails, right? Now, then they moved on to doing sequencers. And so then all of a sudden they were sending thousands of emails, but they were all templated with syntax, whatever. And now it's all AI generated. And I know businesses that are sending millions of emails a month, which is absolutely insane, right? On the other side of things, you have the customer service, and it really kind of depends, but like you could imagine your mom and pop dental shop, like they're not always there to answer the phone. It would be nice to be able to call on like Saturday at 6 when people are busy or maybe people aren't working and be able to schedule an appointment without having somebody there needing to take the call, right? And so that also translates to a chat bot or an email responder. It's essentially the same thing. It's just the medium of which you communicate changes, but the AI is still doing the same thing. It's taking schedules, doing follow-ups, taking information, you know, filling out forms and stuff so that the customer service side of things is on point.
Is there any part of a business right now that you specifically try to not automate or you stay away from automating?
Yeah, I'd say one, finances. And I don't think it's because it's bad to automate finances. I think it's just because I'm not the best finance person. So because I don't understand it at a very intimate level, I tend to stay away from it. And I don't mean like automating like your accounts receivables and whatever. No, I mean like actually automating like statistics and things like that with accounting. Like I'm not an expert at that, right? The other thing I stay away from personally is anything medical or HIPAA related, I don't want to touch, right?
Yeah.
Because same thing with government. I don't want to touch it. But in terms of business, I'd say mostly just finances and the things that really require a personal touch or somebody overlooking it. So we'll do something called man in the loop, which is like maybe we'll do an automation, but then a human has to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
So a human edits it, approves it, says it's good, right? So for very bespoke services, you know, it's always good to have that little bit of human touch, right? So you can have some automations, but the automations, they don't do the job. They enable the person to do the job better.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're using AI as a tool. It's not replacing someone too. I mean, that's kind of an important point. Like if you're an expert in something, you can use it to help further along development or use as a tool, but you're not replacing the individual. It's not because you don't understand finance, it could potentially hallucinate, right? So you don't want to just recklessly use a tool without knowing what the output could be.
Right, exactly. And so I guess the reason why I'm really good at automating sales and customer service and different fulfillment things is because I intimately understand a lot of those problems because, you know, I have those problems within my own business. I'm not saying I don't have finance problems in my business. I totally do. But I'm like not looking at that as well. I'm more focused on the day-to-day operations, right? So yeah, no, I totally agree. Not replacing the individual is key. I mean, even like with my assistant, like every once in a while, I'll be like, hey, what do you spend most of your time on every single day? And she'll tell me, I'll be like, hey, well, let's take this off your plate, but let's add this new thing. You know, now that you have more time, now that you have more leverage, let's make the return on time even greater for what you're working on.
No, that makes sense. Is there anything that you've gone to automate with AI that's backfired that you're willing to talk about?
I mean, I'm going to say not really in the sense of it backfired because it wasn't a good automation. And the reason why is because before we dive deep into automation, we had already been a programming agency for a while. So we already knew the capabilities of what we'd already been through the crap, right? Like we've already made a lot of mistakes and learned from them and whatever. But I would say the ones that have failed, most of the time, they don't fail because of the job. They fail because of communication or improper vetting of the client or just clashing personalities.
Is it ever where they don't maybe give the right spec on what they actually need, or they're not even sure of what the output is that they need?
I mean, that happens a lot. We've gotten better at identifying that problem. So, by, first of all, don't automate something that hasn't happened yet, you know? And when we first started out with automations, there was a lot of people that were like, oh, we're going to have a lot of demand in February. So we need to build this system so that when the demand comes, like, we'll be ready to go. And then February comes and there's no demand. It's like, okay, so you just spent $10,000 on a system that doesn't help you. It doesn't make sense, right? And so, like, always try to make sure that there's actually a need there. And I think also the way we build kind of weeds some of that out. So we always, like, a lot of business owners come and they're like, oh, we want this and this and this and this and that. And it's like a huge menu order of, like, a restaurant menu of what they want, right? Mm-hmm. And that's cool. But we're like, okay, that's cool. But how about what's the most impactful quick win we can do for you, right? And so we'll start with that one impactful thing. And then we give it to them as quickly as possible. So we work a lot with CI/CD framework. I don't know if you know what that is, but basically we'll develop a small prototype as quickly as we can, as best as we can. And we'll give it to them as quickly as we can in order to get feedback on how that is. Because maybe, like, you know, we build an automation, but then it doesn't quite work the way that they wanted. Or maybe the owner has this great idea, but then when the team members get their hands on it, like, their reality is a little bit different because the owner doesn't have his head in the trenches. So he doesn't know exactly what their day-to-day looks like. So we always try to get MVPs and prototypes in the business owner's hands as quickly as possible so that they're able to play around with it and test. And then as we stack on more features, you know, we get feedback. They're like, hey, we like this. We don't like that. We'd like to change that. And it would be cool if we could add this. And we're like, okay. Uh-huh. And so we can start adding those little tweaks early on instead of having a project where it's like, okay, cool, we'll get it done. And then 2 months later, return something in that's not what they wanted, right?
Yeah. What's the tech that you're generally using behind the scenes to build these automations?
You're talking about, like, the code itself or, like, the tools we give our developers?
The models, the code, APIs.
Everything?
AWS. Okay. Yeah. I mean, is it more like AWS? Are you using, like, Gemini models? Are you using Claude models? Yeah.
Yeah. We use a lot of GPT and Claude. So I find Claude is a lot better when it comes to sales and anything writing related, you know, like blog posts or customer service. Like, Claude is just sounds more human for some reason. I don't know why. GPT is a lot better at analytical things. GPT Codex 5.2 that just came out is really good. We've been using that with Cursor to build apps. So that's been helping out our development team a lot. We've also been experimenting with having AI review pull requests that programmers are implementing into code bases to see if it's good or not. And it's been working quite well. That's been quite interesting. We've been thinking about implementing even a bot that whenever somebody adds an issue to GitHub, it'll maybe do a code to see what it looks like. And then the developer just reviews the code and edits it. We know that AWS has a service that does that. We haven't fully implemented that part yet, but we're definitely experimenting with it now. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of changes in the industry. And then in terms of, like, servers, we don't use AWS or Google as much unless the client already has it. We actually prefer to use Volter, which is DigitalOcean, same thing, right? I mean, same server stack, same technology, just a different name and a lot cheaper, I would say. And we use a lot of Kubernetes, a lot of Docker Swarms. Django, Node.js, NNN, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Has there been any technical challenges that you've run into with building out these automations?
One thing is getting credentials from the customer. I know that sounds simple, but...
Yeah, I've run into the same issue, so yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a simple thing. It's more of a customer service problem than it is like a programming problem. But I mean, a lot of these people, they don't even know what their passwords are. So it's like trying to get... Or like... You made a custom app and you need to get into their Google console to add whatever. And it's like, that's difficult to do with some of these people who aren't as tech savvy, right? Anything else that I find makes it particularly difficult? Scope creep is totally a thing. Definitely have to push back on that. People get overly zealous about things. That's why we always try to, we record all our meetings. We always try to put project plans in writing. So this is what you agree that we build, you know, so make sure everything's very transparent. But even with that, scope creep comes in sometimes. And then other than that, I mean, at first, we didn't. There were some clients where we had trouble fully understanding what their vision was. But I think that was more inexperience than it was actually a problem. Because now we don't see that as much because we have a lot more things in place, like making sure like there's already something to automate, giving them the prototype first so that we can, right? So we fleshed out a lot of those issues.
How do you handle the "this is scary" or "I don't trust AI" reactions pushback that you may get?
Well, I mean, if they came in from a cold email, I'll be like, well, who do you think wrote the email? No, that's a hard objection. And for a lot of people, that's pretty hard to know because they just have some sort of mental block there. And, you know, I'm not here to convince people. Like, if they don't want the automation or if it doesn't serve them, I mean, it will serve them, but if they truly don't want it, like, I'm not going to sit there and try to convince somebody otherwise. Like, I'd much rather go to the guy who's like super pumped and excited about getting some new things done in the industry that hasn't been done before, you know, like that's much more exciting. But I guess where we see some of that pushback is like in a business where it's like an old father and he's passing it on to the son. And so the son wants to implement these new things, but the father's like, no, like the old way works. Why would we change it? You know, we see some of that, and they're usually a quick win. Something super small and kind of insignificant is the best way because you can talk to them all you want, but when you actually show them something, it really works. So even just showing them a case study, but like really running through and be like, hey, you know, this similar business, different industry and problem or whatever, like, hey, look what we did there. This is what it looks like for them. We can do this for you. And then like, oh, really? Is that possible? I'm like, how about we start small? We'll do something really small and quick, you know, quick win. It won't cost you very much. It won't take a lot of time. And you can just get your feet wet and see if you like it.
Where do you think AI is going? If you had to, you had your crystal ball, where do you think like 3-5 years? Obviously, it's a changing market. It's crazy. The last couple of years have been crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you were to hypothesize that, where do you think it's going?
Well, AI influencers is already a thing, even though people don't fully believe it yet. I think that software agencies are going to, a lot of them are going to go out of business because business owners are going to be able to make software themselves. So you're going to see a big flood of apps and new stuff coming out because there's going to be a bunch of normal people launching their own apps. And so maybe the new game is more SaaS related and less programming related. I still think there will be programmers, but I feel like it'll only be like very advanced niche stuff or old stuff like COBOL, right? For banks or something. But so yeah, I think at least my industry is going to, like, we need to pivot hard because like engineers now are not, I mean, they know code now, but maybe in 5 years they'll still know code. But in 10 years, they might not know how to program. You know, and that's kind of weird. Outside of that, man, I think it's very good and very bad in a lot of ways. And it's really hard to say.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it, just like the car did the horses, it will probably open up new jobs and, you know, maybe business use cases that we're not even sure of yet, you know? But yeah, it's definitely interesting. Is there any hype takes about AI that you disagree with or you want to kill?
I don't think AI is quite to the point yet to where you can fully automate social media. I mean, you can for like those info talking head videos, not talking head, but like the ones where it's like, they say a story like, you know, oh, this person went missing in 1994 because whatever, like, yeah, those can be automated. But I mean, like truly valuable content, I don't think can be automated to a high enough quality extent yet. Right. I think that's coming. I think it's close. But I still think that there needs to be that human element. The other thing is because we're posting so much AI content now, the AI is just rewriting AI content.
Yeah.
So it's just learning from itself at this point, you know? So as time goes on, I believe the information gets more and more diluted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a problem in and of itself. I think that kind of covers it, at least my view.
I know just being on like LinkedIn even, but more so Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, it's all AI generated Sora content now. I mean, it's
a lot of it. Yeah.
It's
hard.
It's hard to just have like real, genuine content. It's not AI derivative. Yeah.
To be real, it cuts through the noise pretty well.
So we talked about this a little bit earlier. How do you think AI is going to influence development in the future? I mean, now we're using Cursor, right?
Mm-hmm.
we're using MCP servers to get information on Kubernetes clusters or whatever, but we don't have new junior engineers that are getting hired at the same rate they were just a couple of years ago. What happens to engineers and developers, you know, in the next 5-10 years?
They become prompt warriors, or they switch industries, right? I mean, even our guys, like I handed them Cursor like a couple months ago. And before that, it was like Microsoft Copilot, right? Like 2 years ago, something like that. And even Microsoft Copilot, like, dude, the difference in productivity between my guys was insane when I gave them Copilot. It was like, it's not like they don't know how to write code. It's just that they can write it so much faster. They can be like, I want this, this, and that. And there's a huge difference. It's like, I see a lot of business owners who don't know programming, who try to program with Cursor, and then they jump on Cursor and it doesn't work. Cursor sucks, blah, 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 and it's horrible. And I'm like, you don't know how to talk to it.
Yeah,
it's really what it is, you know? I mean, there are some things like, yeah, it probably isn't the best app, but understanding how to architect systems, how to describe how it works with data, what order to build things in, that's huge, right? Because, you know, you get a certain database model set up, certain APIs set up, and all of a sudden you add something crazy in the mix and you have to redo everything, right? And so it's like a lot of people just jumping in, like, they don't know that. So to answer your question, man, I mean, like I said, we're implementing AI more and more in all of our dev workflows. We're implementing it in code review and debugging and our CI/CD type of stuff to make sure that nothing broken gets pushed. We're implementing it and helping them even on issues, you know, they get an issue, they talk to Cursor, Cursor spits out some code, they review some of the code, they write some code themselves, they tell it to write a certain function a certain way, they sip their coffee, they wait, they test it, you know. And for testing too, it's huge for like unit testing and integration testing. Like, you write out a whole API in Django and then you're like, hey, unit test this, you know, integration test this. Like, that's huge. The speed of which it can write out some of that code that, you know, before would take, you know, weeks is insane.
Yeah, I agree. I know for me, being able to vet the output that Cursor gives you and not just trusting it, like you mentioned business leaders that may go use Cursor for the first time, but they don't really understand what they're at, even understanding what to ask, but then understanding what the output is that they're given. Like, you need to have some awareness around that, at least currently. Maybe in the future you won't to the same degree, but right now you know that it still can hallucinate. It could still mess up. So you need to know how to frame the question the right way so it gives the output that you want, but then also vet the output that it's giving you. And if you don't know anything about the subject that you're asking it to help with, you don't know if it's a good output or not necessarily.
Right, exactly.
Any closing thoughts?
Not really. I think the world's going to change a lot really quickly. And we're along for the ride. Everybody needs to pivot. And every business, every industry needs to pivot, not just ours. Right. So the faster you can kind of get on board and start testing new stuff, I think the better off you're probably going to be.
Yeah. Be ready for it, because it's coming regardless. Like you'd even mentioned, you know, that the father and the son, the father may not want AI. He probably is talking to an AI chatbot on a website every day. He's probably getting phone calls from AI chatbots. He just doesn't know it. He's already interacting. He's already in that world. He just doesn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, appreciate it. Thank you, Austin, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Brian. Definitely.
All right. That's the conversation with Austin Reed from Horizon.dev. My biggest takeaway is his framing that automation isn't magic. The win is picking a real pain point that already exists and getting a quick win live and then iterating. Also, the AI is cheap now mindset is a trap. If your business is doing real volume, you need systems that can actually hold up, with guardrails, approvals where it matters, and someone who can sanity check the output. If you want to connect with Austin or check out what they're building, I've got links in the show notes to his LinkedIn and to Horizon.dev. If this episode was useful, share it with a DevOps, Ops, or business friend who's trying to automate workflows without creating a bigger mess. Hit follow wherever you listen so you don't miss the weekly news recaps plus these guest interviews. We'll be back with a regular Ship It Weekly news episode later this week. See you then. Thanks.